Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you, so listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So Pitt's going to play Duquesne in football, but not basketball? Is that what I'm hearing there?
That's what you're hearing.
Bob, you ready for the big Pitt-Duquesne football opener?
Very interesting to me.
What do you think of that?
I would prefer being at Rooney Field. I'd like to watch
that
it over there. I think that would be a better look.
You'd get a sellout there.
You'd get a sellout for sure. I would prefer, hey, Jerry Schmidt's done a very good job with that program, but this is a little bit strange for me to consider Duquesne right off the bat. But you're right, they should be playing basketball. To me, I don't understand that at all.
Do you have the Pat Narducci call from earlier today?
Maybe this is the olive branch from Pitt football to be able to give it to basketball. Maybe they'll hand it off at some point in 2025 for basketball to play.
It's a surprise, I'll tell you that.
On the basketball note, real quick, I was surprised. Pitt's 3-0. Duke is undefeated. It's the only ranked team Pitt's going to play in a while because the ACC's not doing that well, and yet they're 14.5-point underdogs. I don't understand 14.5 points.
That's a lot, man. Last year, a great moment with Blake Hinson jumping up on the scorer's table. That was tremendous. All right, Bob, I promised you something here, and that is the biggest underdogs to ever win in NFL playoff history. Are you ready for this, Limits?
I am.
I'll give you each a guess. Which game was it? Biggest upset in the history of the NFL playoffs, including Super Bowls.
Oh, jeez. Wide open conversation there with that one. A biggest upset.
It was an 18-point spread, and the other team won.
Was it can you limit it to a Super Bowl or non-Super Bowl, just to make it easier?
It was a Super Bowl. Limits?
I'm going to say the San Francisco 49ers over the Cincinnati Bengals.
What?
Said it?
No.
No, you said in the Super Bowl?
Yes, the biggest upset ever in Super Bowl history.
Denver?
I thought you meant in the Super Bowl.
You're becoming like me and not listening to me anymore.
Would I say Denver when they played at MetLife Stadium?
No.
No.
They lost that game.
That's what I mean. Was that an... I can't remember point spreads. I don't remember.
Was there something confusing about the question?
No,
yes,
you're asking
this might
us,
be on me.
You're what asking
the biggest,
us to remember points. I don't remember what
what's
point
the biggest
spreads,
upset in playoff history? I'm sorry. That's the question. I may have misphrased it.
Biggest
Jets.
Upset?
Yes. The Jets were an... Joe Namath Jets were an 18-point underdog.
And he guaranteed
and they
upset
a win. The Colts.
Yeah.
All these years later, Bob, that game stands.
I didn't know they had point spreads back then. And at least not to the point where they do it now, obviously.
I mean, that's how the NFL, half the reason the NFL rose to the level it did is because it's the easiest game to bet on.
Or is it? It's hard.
I mean, actually, you know what I mean?
Right. Well, there's no question. That's why they have to be somewhat transparent with who's injured and who's not.
It's very simple. It's just the point spread. That's what you want. You know what I mean?
Right.
Even
so,
back then.
That was an 18-point spread. Wow. I knew
the
it was
the second
big.
Biggest in playoff history. Rams were a 14-point favorite over Belichick's Patriots, and they lost on a Vinatieri field goal. Where
that
were you for that one,
was the greatest show on turf era. Where was I for that? I don't remember.
Were you drunk?
No, I don't get drunk.
Okay.
I learned my lesson. I did once, and I got way out of control. And
you've only been drunk once in your life?
Mm-hmm. Well, my wife will tell you the one that sticks out to her, which I'm not going to tell you that story because you make fun of me. But I think that one, that was my, that's it, no more. It's not good for you.
Did Ron ever tell you the story of when he fell in love with a girl named Gretchen?
Gretchen?
And,
no.
Yeah. He, I guess, took her home after the dance in high school, and she puked all over the porch. And so it became the Gretchen for Gretchen story.
Gretchen for Gretchen. No.
Isn't that sad? And was that an indication? Was that an indication of how Ron's luck was going to go from there on out? He thought he was in great shape after the dance. And then...
Took her home.
Yeah.
And she threw up.
Never even made it inside the door.
And that's not exactly what you want to see when you're expecting something different.
Good grief.
Remember the sawdust, Bob, when someone puked in school? Everybody would see the pile of sawdust and immediately.
Kitty litter became a thing too.
Did it?
Yes, because if you didn't have sawdust.
What did you have in your elementary school hallways, Limits, when somebody puked?
Yeah, it was that, I guess it was like that sawdust type of stuff where they just kind of throw it down on the ground and just leave it there for hours. I always wonder, like, why is it still sitting there? Why don't you just clean it up?
Can't they just mop it up? Why didn't they do that when we were kids? Why the sawdust?
I don't know, but the sawdust doesn't work when there are chunks involved.
Baking soda.
Oh, God. When are there chunks involved?
I know.
Can I change the subject?
Yes, please.
And it would always be, who was it? You know, down the hallway, somebody would get that sniff where it'd be like, uh-oh. And then you'd look down and there was the pile of sawdust. And then throughout the whole school, it would be a whodunit,
right? Who did this?
Yeah.
Who threw up?
I'm changing the subject. Joe, our video with Pitt Basketball is now out. You've been asking for a while, when is it going to come out? It's now officially posted on social media.
Did you hear about this, Bob?
I heard all about it. I heard everything that went on in that game. I saw your turnaround kick leg out little shot.
Out of bounds.
Which looked good.
Biba Cummings and Jalen Lowe were calling me the GOAT after that, Bob.
That's pretty impressive. Yeah. They're calling you the GOAT.
Yeah, it was incredible. So that's up at 93.7 The Fan. This Instagram, where is it?
It's on Instagram. It's on Twitter at 93.7 The Fan. Mm-hmm. This is the first video of three that are coming out with our interaction with Pitt Basketball. So this is just a start. And I can only say, Joe, or Bob, that we paired up on teams. So Jalen Lowe was with Joe and I was with Biba Cummings. It starts out pretty bad for Biba and I, but it's not how you start, it's how you finish in this best of three.
Well,
so do we see the finish on this first version?
Biba made a half-court shot on
You're giving away the answers.
I'm sorry.
And I also splashed in a free throw after you missed a couple of free throws, and then Biba splashed in a free throw, and we won the free throw shooting contest.
Let's focus on today's video, where I was the star of the horse game, Limits.
You were the star of the horse game. Your ability to make a shot from out of bounds behind the basket was pretty impressive.
It was Larry Bird-like.
I've been impressed with your ability to make shots from all over, actually. I didn't know you had that in you, and I also was impressed when you went to the volleyball court and took one for the team. You stood in front of one of those.
That was Olivia Babcock.
Yes, Olivia Babcock could throw it up there at 100 miles. I don't know how many miles an hour. It was
about 60.
That's a lot.
And she took a little off, and it was still unhittable.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Although Limits returned one, too, and I'm very proud of
it. So I have it ready for if you want to try soccer with the Riverhounds. I already cleared that, so you can try to score on an actual
Limits?
Riverhounds goaltender.
Yes,
let's do that. Penalty kicks. I'll score on 6 of 10.
No, you won't.
Yes, I
no,
will.
No, you won't.
How
no,
many
you
will
won't.
You?
No, you won't.
Yes, I will.
3 of 10.
I've already done it, Bob. There
not
was a guy.
Against, not against a guy who is the rain. He just won the best goaltender.
He's a professional goalie. You're not scoring 6 out of 10 on him.
He's a real
10
good.
Years ago, there was a kid trying out for the Riverhounds. Granted, he wasn't on the team and a good goalie, but I scored 6 out of 10 on him, Bob. If you kick it to the right part of the net, nobody in the world can stop it.
He was trying out. If they saw that performance in the Riverhounds front office, they probably didn't take him on the team. Poor guy. Joe Starkey destroyed him
Starkey
in penalty
scored.
Kicks.
You're
not on the team.
Forget
we don't need
it.
To see any more from you.
He may not have played a game since then, Bob. He might be blackballed from all of soccer.
Well, if you guys want to set that up, let me know, and I will do it for you.
Definitely. We do. We would love to. Maybe, hopefully when it gets a little bit warmer.
You won't do 6 of 10. I guarantee it.
I'll bet you $5,000.
What?
Payable in cash.
$5,000.
Mm-hmm. You didn't even get us a Christmas present, Bob.
What if I make 6 out of 10?
Are you still reeling from Bob's lack of a gift or even a card for Christmas?
Not at all. Bob's presence is a gift enough for me.
I told you my philosophy with this. The more you extend gift giving, the worse it gets. Then you start buying for everybody.
You could have gotten me some candied walnuts or something.
Guess what? You would give me candied walnuts back. And then what would we be doing? We'd be
exchanging candied walnuts. Yeah.
No. That's like I buy you a tie, you buy me a tie. I give you a gift card, you give me one. What are we doing?
That's not a bad point, Limits, is it?
Bob, quarterbacks give their offensive linemen all kind of presents, like watches, like golf carts. You're our quarterback.
You're our quarterback.
You're our quarterback, Bob. We're our gifts.
They don't call it pumping Joe for nothing, Bob.
We block for you, Bob, every day.
Give us presents.
As you take all the fame.
Okay. That's not true at all. I take most of the grief around here. So, all right, fine. Next year?
Next year, I'm ready right now to play.
It's over.
What about for my birthday?
I meant gift giving.
What about the soccer thing?
Well, I got to just set it up on a time where he's around.
Okay. Let's do that. We got to get to this. I've been promising this.
Oh, can I say one more thing beforehand?
Yes.
Craig has weighed in on Twitter on our video.
Yes.
And he said, true story, I once lost a game of one-on-one to Joe. I'm glad everyone else is now getting to see how good Joe really is, so my loss doesn't sound so bad.
Well, here's the story.
Here's another one, just so I can interject.
Please.
I also have, and this is, I will partake in this. We're going against one of the best golfers in Western Pennsylvania sports history, local golfers. On a closest to the pin from 100 yards out.
Me and you?
And yes, I'll tell you who it is when we do
I'm going to win that too.
No, you're not.
I have a knack for those little competitions.
Okay.
You'll see,
Bob. We'll see. We'll do that in the spring.
What did you just say? Oh, Craig weighed in. I played Craig, who was then the producer of the show I was on. This was a million years ago, 2011 or something. That's the game that preceded the Pony matchup, where I played Pony in a one-on-one at LA Fitness at Settlers Ridge, Bob. Best of three that I won game one and was leading game two when I snapped my Achilles. Do you remember that story?
I remember what it was like around here when you snapped your Achilles.
Yeah.
That's hard. And
No, I'll never overcome it. My left calf
is shriveled.
And why
are you still taking shots on the basketball?
That's different than playing, than actually playing a game. The point there is that I was winning against Pony and was about to win when I went up for a simple jump shot and my Achilles snapped like a piece of rope is what you would hear. I'm like, oh my God, Andrew, call 911. But the real story of that, I was in LA Fitness, the gym's on the second floor. They brought in a gurney to take me out. Nobody even looked at me. There's a man on a gurney coming down the stairs, going to an ambulance, and there's dozens of people on their elliptical machines or whatever. They didn't even look up, Bob.
Not only that,
Pony did not accompany me to the hospital. Do you think he should have? Do you think Pony should have gotten in that ambulance?
Yes, I think he should have.
Limits, do you agree?
Yeah, I'd probably say so.
Yeah. His point
is that...
He
should have held your hand, too. I mean, that's a troubling situation there.
It's going to be okay. Don't worry. Don't worry. They're going to take care of you. Don't worry.
His point was that he had done everything he could do. He called 911. He made sure the people came. And then what is he going to do after?
Yeah, actually, I'm okay with Pony not going.
Support. Does that present a different case, Bob?
I think because you were beating him.
Yeah, I think that was
deep-seated in his head there. He was saying, oh, what am I going to do? He beat me. I'm going to have to tell this story. Now I'm taking him to the hospital.
But that wasn't the worst thing that happened. In the ambulance, I called my wife. And instead of saying, oh my God, are you okay? I'll meet you at the hospital. She lambasted me for 10 minutes. I couldn't even understand what we were saying. It was like the teacher on Charlie Brown. You know how she talks? Except at a decibel of 100. I didn't even know what she was saying. And that's the last thing I needed, right? I was injured. I just torn my Achilles. And instead of sympathy, she had told me that morning, don't do this. You're stupid. Don't do it. And I did it, and I snapped my Achilles, and she wasn't happy, Bob.
No. And you probably, happy. You probably rethought the whole thing and said, why did I do it?
Why don't the teachers in Charlie Brown have actual voices?
That's a good question, Bob. Why is that?
I don't know. Why are we going down
because
this path?
That mimics what all of us experienced in school, where whatever the teacher was saying went in one ear and out the other.
Yeah, we weren't really listening.
Yeah. Mrs. Mintz, Bob, my math teacher, who ironically had bad breath. She used to talk to us.
Mince.
She used to talk to us, and I didn't hear one thing. And one day she said, Joe Starkey, you just are in another world. To which I said, pretty much, yeah.
Do you ever, you don't see yourself when you go on to one of your rants?
No.
Okay. It's very interesting to me where you look. You're not looking over here. You look out the door here. You're like, you're out the window, focused on whatever you're focused on, but it's certainly not me or Austin or anything else. You look straight out and you never change.
I go to a different place, I think.
Yeah, but I just...
Is it scary for you?
It's unnatural to me to look like... If I had something to say to you and I go like this, I'm looking out here and I'm not... I just couldn't do it.
I guess I'm imagining myself talking to the people out there more than just to you if I'm in a rant.
Yeah, but then you'd look at the camera if you were talking to people out there. You're not. You're looking outdoors.
Nobody wants to see me on a camera, Bob. Can we get to the topic
at hand? Do you like pork rinds?
That's nuts. By the way, we might as... if you can find... Because I mentioned earlier, we opened with the vibe in town. that maybe not what you'd expect for Steelers-Ravens, but maybe understandable given the circumstances. I used to go to these Steeler rallies downtown before games. They were down at the courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people would speak at them. Players would speak. It was crazy. And that's where the infamous Cornish Hen interviews came from. Do you happen to have that?
The Cornish Hen interview?
Yeah. They've gone down in history as the Cornish Hen interviews, where I would ask various people at a Steeler rally if they've ever had a Cornish Hen. You can find that. Well, just look under Cornish Hen, okay? But in the meantime, Bob, let's get to the topic at hand, shall we? The Steelers quarterback situation. And Mike Tomlin's sudden, just complete lack of confidence in Russell Wilson. Let me play for you some quotes, may I?
Yes, please.
Let's start with after the game the other day, Limits, when I was watching the game thinking, is Tomlin going to make a move? Or at least I was wondering, should he make a move? This dude, Mr. Unlimited, had 65 yards at the beginning of the fourth quarter in passing. Let's hear what Tomlin said after the game.
Not really, no. Because our failures were collective. And I just think at this juncture, the most prudent thing for us to do was to stick with those that were on the field and work through it.
That was him being asked, did you ever consider going to Fields? And I will tell you, Bob, not really is not the same as no. Not to me, anyway. That required a little bit of thinking. Not really? Not really? What does that mean? He didn't say absolutely not. No, I didn't think, of course not. He said not really. Now, let me follow that up with Tomlin at his news conference the other day. And which one are you going to play first, Limits?
This is Tomlin on the possibility of playing Justin Fields more.
In the past, you've kind of rotated the quarterback position when you're looking for a spark on offense. How do you evaluate that position going into the playoffs? And is there a consideration of using Justin more?
I'm certainly open to utilizing Justin. He has an awesome skill set. We've done some of that in the past. We've done less of it in recent weeks. He experienced an injury or so a couple of weeks back that slowed some of that. But certainly in an effort to win this game, I am open to any combination or combinations of the division of labor in an effort to do so. And so I'm certainly open to that as we develop plans this week.
No head coach says that about an entrenched starter he believes in. Imagine Ben in his prime and Tomlin saying, yeah, I'm open to any combination at quarterback with the snap count. Let me play for you the third, Bob, and then I'll throw it to you. This was the most damning one of all as it relates to Tomlin's confidence in Russell Wilson. When you consider that about a month and a half ago, Russell Wilson went into Cincinnati and shredded the Bengals and outgunned Joe Burrow. If you can believe that, it happened. We all remember. The game plan for the rematch was we can't possibly outgun Joe Burrow. In fact, we're going to keep our quarterback completely under wraps and just try to play keep away. This was Tomlin on that. Listen to this, because he says at the beginning, we don't live in our fears, and then lays out practically a doctoral dissertation on how he lives in his fears.
We do not live in our fears.
You guys were one of the, I think you were fourth in rushing attempts, but near the bottom in yards per carry. What made that something that you wanted to continue to be such a big part of your identity, even when it wasn't necessarily always working?
You know, for us, it's about playing to a personality that we prescribe to engineer victory, to possess the ball. And a component of possessing the ball is not only time, but managing risk. And obviously, there's less risk with running the football than throwing it, and sometimes that's a component of the discussion as well.
In other words, you don't trust your quarterback. So, Bob, we have, did you consider a change in the game? Not really, no. Did you live in your fears the other day? Of course we didn't. But then again, we were managing risk and didn't want to give Joe Burrow the football. Will Justin Fields play more in this game? I'd consider any combination at the quarterback position, paraphrasing Tomlin. What do you make of all that going into Baltimore? Like I said, if I didn't know better, I'd think he was secretly going to start Justin Fields.
I think it's more, and I think that last one was more interesting than the others. He just does not like, and he pounds this into everyone's head over there about not turning the ball over. And when you do, there's a consequence for it. So you become less aggressive. But in order to be successful in a passing game, You can't be worrying about turning the ball over. But because he makes that statement, it makes me think, like you, that he's lost a little bit of confidence in Russell Wilson. I do not think he's going to start Justin Fields.
I took that
more as I will try to utilize, and I think we all thought that. I thought that fourth and one right before halftime, I thought it was perfect for Justin Fields, and they didn't do it. I think that's what he was kind of referring to. I don't know that when he said any combination, again, you could read that any way you want. I read it less so in that he's going to start or play a series. It's more so they're going to try to figure him into this game plan somehow, some way. So, and I think they should have done that in the Cincinnati game. I think they should have had him ready. If he was ready to go and he was the backup quarterback, then he should have been in that position. So this game, this is it. If you lose, you're done. So I think they'll utilize him any way they can, but it won't be as a starter.
Quick hook on Russell?
Well, if that's a different conversation. If that starts out badly and he doesn't have anything going in that, yes, I would. For the same reason.
Do you think Tomlin will?
For the same reason he said, I'll use any combination. Yeah, I do. I think he would. Why wouldn't you?
It's just striking to me how this is his default philosophy on football, is managing risk at any cost. That was the whole Kenny Pickett era. And, you know, in retrospect, maybe you don't blame him because it was Kenny Pickett, the guy that he went to the mat for to draft, I might remind you. But if that's your philosophy in the end, where's that going to get you? He had Ben all those years, and yeah, Ben was Ben. So you played that game, and he would constantly say, when people would ask him, hey, Ben took a lot of chances there, Tomlin would say something to the effect of, that's what you live with when you have Ben. Since then, it just seems like Mike Tomlin has his clamps in this organization from top to bottom, including, as you know, he's the head coach, the very philosophy they live and die by. And it seems like even after he watches his offense outgun Joe Burrow and Cincy, after some adversity and some bad games, he defaults to, this game is about managing risk first and foremost. Well, it's really not. It's really not. I watched the Lions and the Vikings the other night. There were two turnovers in the game, both by the Lions, and they won the game pretty handily in the end.
Without half of their defense.
It's about what he claims he is, which is the no-fear guy. We have no fears going into these games. I'll tell you what, man. To win this game, to actually win it, not cover the spread, to win it, they're going to have to employ some risk into their game.
They do not live in our fears.
Yes, you do. See, that's the thing, and you just admitted it.
There's no question. I mean, I understand all the logic that comes with winning the turnover battle. I get it. Generally speaking, if you do that, you have better results. However, as you said, and I can cite two games for you this year. You mentioned Detroit. There was a game where Goff threw five interceptions and they won. That's never really happened before, but it happened. So you overcome those things. How do you do it? By being aggressive and striking when you can, especially early in the game. If you're interested in running the ball and not turning the ball over and playing it tight to the vest and being physical, you better have success doing it.
And if
they
you
have not had a good run success here in the last several games.
Not at all. And if you don't believe in Russell Wilson and there's every indication that you suddenly don't, then just go to the other guy. You know? But I think, as I mentioned, I think yesterday, Bob, maybe it was today, in the end, unfortunately, I think we're circling back to, maybe it was Bill Walsh who said it, maybe John Madden, that if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one.
What does that lead?
Now Bill Walsh had Steve Young and Joe Montana. Right. He had two. But in this case, I think you don't even have one.
I think this all gets back to the plan of moving forward, the succession plan.
Let's talk about that coming up.
Okay, because that's going to be a big topic, especially if it ends badly here.
Oh, I think there's a lot of reputations, legacies, futures on the line in this game. I just, for both sides.
Right.
This game is just fraught with bigger picture stories. Bob, like I was mentioning, this game is just fraught with bigger picture stories. George Pickens has a great game and the Steelers lose. Then the Steelers want to trade him. I think he's even more marketable, or maybe just marketable. If he has a horrible game and blows up and things go all wrong again, how does that hurt his availability? How does that affect the Steelers wanting to sign him long term? We could go on and on here. What if the Ravens lose? I mean, when will they ever win? You'd have to ask that question. People asked it last year. They'll be asking it again this year. And then there's Russell Wilson. I think whether the Steelers sign him or not may very well come down to this one game. If he's great and leads them to victory, then he starts to become a more realistic candidate to be the guy here. If he stinks again and they lose, then I think there's almost no chance he's their long-term quarterback. Do you agree?
Yes, probably. I think their plan all along was brought him in here. They knew what they thought they were going to get. But in that last drive last week, they got exactly the opposite of that, which is surprising for someone who's been around as long as he has. I mean, that whole drive was just ill-conceived and run not the right way. So, now, that does not discount the fact that Pat Freiermuth had one right in his hands. If he would have made it, who knows what would happen subsequently. But I think the plan was to sign him. The question is, their original plan, if that was it, how long did they have that in mind? I mean, he is going to be 37 next year. And for me, I've seen too many guys just, you know, fall off a little bit as they get toward 40. And I don't know what his situation would be. I go back and I hearken back to the calf injury and those kinds of things. And how, you know, you never know what's going to happen injury-wise, especially to an older guy. But if this does not go well, I think they have to rethink it all. And even if it goes well, and even if they sign him, Joe, to whatever it may be, that's all negotiable. Could he be a bridge quarterback? Could he be someone to help someone else? Would he be agreeable to that? How many years do you give a 37-year-old next year quarterback moving forward? And it certainly does not change. You're still going to be searching one day for that next quarterback. You have to. How do you achieve it?
Do you think it could be Fields? And what if he comes in and leads them to victory in this game?
Well, then things change quickly, don't they?
Yes, they do.
I feel more comfortable only because of the age separation with Justin Fields. And from what I saw of him in the first six games, it was probably more consistent play than I have seen in his entire career in Chicago, which was mostly running. He has to do what Lamar Jackson has done. Figure out how to throw the ball from the pocket, make quick decision situations, don't hesitate. Know where guys are, know when to step up, know when not to. Don't just escape by trying to roll out and utilizing your legs, even though you're tempted to do it because you've done it your whole career. Those are things that if you believe you can get out of him, I don't think it's a bad idea to sign him for a few years and see what happens. And still draft, you still have to redraft the position. It's that important to do. But how do you do it if you're going to draft where they draft? That's been an ongoing problem with them. When you're not in the top five, chances are you're not going to get the quarterback that you may want.
I always say the two great ironies of the, what is it now, a 21-year non-losing streak? Something like that. 20. What is it? How many years?
18. Oh, no, 21 for the team, yeah.
For the team, yeah. Right? The 21-year non-losing streak was born of a losing year. And the guy most responsible for it, Ben Roethlisberger, their losing year enabled them to get him. That's ironic. And the other irony is that Mike Tomlin does have an impressive non-losing streak, but he does have a losing season. As Donnie Football said yesterday, it's the postseason.
Right.
So
yeah, I mean,
that to me, Bob,
those
are the two great ironies.
Yeah, and so I think when you draft the way they draft, it's hard to do that unless you get lucky and see a guy like Lamar Jackson fall all the way to where Baltimore took him after the Steelers passed on him, which is interesting too in its own right. But there are a lot of that. That goes around the league. But I just think it's still going to be a conversation moving forward, regardless of what they decide to do. How long, if it's one of these two guys, how long does that go before you may need somebody else? It's a position a lot of teams chase for a long period of time.
Oh,
and
man.
You don't want to be, and that's why I credit Sean Payton in a way. People were dumping on him early in this whole process. You know, the way they played, what they did with Russell Wilson. But at least he was finite. He knew what he wanted to do. He wanted to move on. He had a guy in mind who he thought would be available when he picked. And I've read accounts of that. He was enamored with Bo Nix.
I credit him.
He brought him
yeah.
in. He's played him. He didn't hesitate. You're playing. You're our guy. And by the end of the year now,
he's a star is what he is.
He is an emerging
right
star. And you've solved your quarterback situation. That doesn't mean it can't go the other way either. I mean, it could. But, I mean, that's a guy who had a plan with it. And that's what I was expecting here, some sort of plan. You know, I don't know if there still is one. What is it?
I mean, the plan was Kenny Pickett.
But that was the wrong pick.
I know, but that kind of sets you back,
right.
You know, when you invest the 20th pick.
If you make mistakes there, you're going to be chasing. It's not unlike with chasing Ryan
Jets.
Shazier.
Look at
that
the
whole
Jets.
Position.
Yeah.
Right. Look at all these teams. Look at Indianapolis. ever since Andrew Luck went, what have they brought in? Veteran after veteran, didn't work. Now they draft Anthony Richardson. That doesn't seem to work.
That's the way it can go.
So what do? You keep drafting, or do you keep bringing in veterans for a year or two?
You hope you get a higher pick, but that's never going to happen when you're 10-7 and losing in the playoffs every year. Listen to the Pomp and Joe show every Wednesday to hear about Starkey's Card of the Week from the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. Contests run every Wednesday through Friday at noon at the 93.7thefan.com contesting page. Bob, would you like to take a little trip around the league and look at some of these other
playoff
games?
Yes, some intriguing matchups we got going on.
Guess how I'm going to phrase this for you, Bob. Which coach and quarterback are under the most pressure? Who has the most to gain and lose from this weekend of NFL football, which includes a Monday night game, I might add?